This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Columbia Network takes pleasure in bringing you Suspense. Suspense. Columbia's play theater of outstanding thrillers. Produced and directed by William Spear and scored by Bernard Herrmann. The notable melodramas from fiction and stage and screen, from the world's great literature of entertaining excitement, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense. Tonight's adventure in suspense is from the pen of Dorothy Sayers. She called it The Cave of Ali Baba. Like the tale told by Scheherazade, a distinguished ancestress in the storytelling art, Miss Sayers' thriller deals with 40 thieves and with two magic words. For your uneasy listening, then, suspense presents The Cave of Ali Baba. On a Saturday afternoon in January, in a grim and narrow house in Lambeth, a man sat eating kippers and reading the daily paper. He was smallish and spare, with brown hair rather too regularly waved and a strong, brown, pointed beard. His double-breasted navy blue suit, his socks, tie, and handkerchief were all scrupulously matched, and his brown boots just a trifle too highly polished. He did not look a gentleman, not even a gentleman's gentleman. Yet there was something about his appearance which suggested that he was accustomed to the manner of life in good families. Superior butler, perhaps, yet not old enough to be retired. A footman who had come into a legacy, yes. He had just finished eating, and he was sipping his coffee, when a slight noise at the front door caught his ear. Swiftly. Too swiftly for a quiet little man sitting eating kippers and reading his paper on a Saturday afternoon. He sprang up, he dashed through the small hallway, and he flung the door open.
Of course, no one in sight. The society is at least dramatic in its delivery of its correspondence.
And as if he knew what he would find, he shut the door and turned to the hat stand in the hall. An envelope had been placed there. It was addressed to Joseph Rogers. So Mr. Rogers opened the note.
Number 21. An extraordinary general meeting will be held tonight at the house of number 1 at 11:30. You will be absent at your peril. The word is finality. Finality. Yes, I think so.
The man called Joseph Rogers stood for a moment studying the note. Then he strode to the rear of the house, to a tall safe built in the wall. Carefully, he manipulated a dial. He swung the safe door open. He stepped inside, into a small strong room. He opened a drawer marked correspondence, placed the note inside, and then came out again. A moment to reset the lock for a new combination, and then he went back into the living room. He reached for the telephone. He lifted it from the cradle and then reconsidered.
Too dangerous.
He hurried upstairs and clambered into an attic. In the furthest corner, he searched for and found a knothole in the woodwork. He pressed it. A concealed trapdoor swung open, and he was in the loft of the adjoining house. He paused before three cages, in each of them a carrier pigeon. Carefully, he wrote a note, slipped it under a pigeon's wing.
There you are, my pretty. There, take it easy now. There you go. Fly straight. 4:30. I'll send another pigeon at 5 and the third at 6. I should have my answer by 9:30 at the latest. Oh, I forgot one thing, most important.
Mr. Rogers moved through the trapdoor, back into the attic of his own house, and once again he stood before the tall safe built in the wall. He opened the door, stepped into the strong room, moved for a moment quietly in the dark, and then spoke gently.
Now, be good, my sweetheart. I'm depending on you. Open sesame. Come on now, old thing. Open sesame. Open sesame. That's better. That's very much better.
By 9:30, his answer was back. All the little piece of paper said was a hasty okay. At a quarter before 11, he took his revolver from a locked drawer, inspected it carefully. Yes, loaded it with cartridges from an unbroken packet, and left the house. He walked quickly, keeping well away from the wall. And when he climbed on a bus, he sat next to the conductor, where he could watch all who got on and off. By 25 minutes after 11, he was out on lonely Hampstead Heath, pausing in the shadow of a large tree to adjust a black velvet mask on which, in white thread, was stitched the number 21. Then he stepped briskly to the door of the villa that lay before him and...
What is it?
Finality.
Come in. Go right on through. Number one will check you in.
Right. "21, sir."
"Lift your mask." "Very well, 21. You may go on to the meeting room."
"Thank you, sir."
The room of the villa in which Mr. Rogers now stood was a large one, a brilliantly lighted room. There was a gramophone in one corner blaring out a jazz tune. To its rhythm, couples, masked men and women, were dancing. Some were in evening dress, some in tweeds and jumpers. In another corner of the room was the bar. Mr. Rogers went up to it and asked the masked man in charge for a double whiskey. He consumed it slowly, leaning on the bar. The room filled. Presently, someone moved across to the gramophone and stopped it. Mr. Rogers looked around. Number one, the massive gentleman in evening dress who had checked him in, appeared on the threshold. A tall woman in black stood beside him. Her mask, embroidered with a white number two, covered her hair and her face completely. Only her fine bearing, her white arms, and her dark eyes, shining through the eye slits, proclaimed her as a woman of power, of physical attraction. The masked dancers were silent now as number one spoke.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we are short two members tonight. I need not inform you of the disastrous failure of our plan for obtaining the plans of the Court Windlesham Heliscoper. Our courageous and devoted friends, number 15 and number 38, were betrayed and taken by the police. Some of you might fear that under examination these two would break down and give away our society. There is no need for such a fear. I gave the usual orders, and their tongues have been silenced. Their defense will be discreetly compensated in the usual manner. I call upon number 12 and 34 to undertake this agreeable task. They will attend me at my office for their instructions after the meeting. Will the numbers I have named kindly signify by raising their hands that I are able and willing to perform this duty? Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please take your partners for the next dance.
The gramophone struck up again. Mr. Rogers turned to a girl near him in a red dress. She nodded, and they slipped into the movement of a foxtrot. The couples gyrated solemnly and in silence. Their shadows were flung against the blinds as they turned and stepped to and fro. The girl in red spoke to Mr. Rogers.
What's happened? I'm frightened, don't you? I feel as if something awful was about to happen.
It does take one a bit short. Number one's way of doing things. But it's safer like that.
Oh, those poor men.
No talking, please. You know the rules.
Sorry.
In silence, the dance continued. And then it came to an end. And then when it had finished, the dancers came again to where number one sat and waited with tense eagerness for him to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may wonder why this extraordinary meeting has been called. The reason is a serious one. The failure of our recent attempt was no accident. The police were not on the premises that night by accident. We have a traitor amongst us. This last failure was not the first. You'll remember the unfortunate way in which the affair of the Dinglewood pearls turned out. And there were others. However, I am happy to say that our minds can now be easy. All these troubles have been traced to their origin. The offender has been discovered and will be removed. The misguided member who introduced the traitor to our ranks will be placed in a position where his lack of caution will have no further ill effects. There's no cause for alarm. Ladies and gentlemen, please take your partners for the next dance.
Again, the gramophone took up its bizarre monotony, and the masked dancers glided and turned. And their movements were sharper, more staccato. The girl in red was claimed by a tall mask in evening dress. A hand laid on Mr. Rogers' arm made him start. A small, plump woman in a green jumper slipped a cold hand into his. The dance went on. When it stopped, everyone stood detached, stiffened in expectation. The endless interval was over. Number one raised his voice.
Ladies and gentlemen, you will no doubt wish to be relieved of the questions on your mind. I will name the persons involved. Number 37.
No, no! Silence!
Whatever!
I swear on him!
Silence!
You have failed in discretion. You will be dealt with. If you have anything to say in defense of your folly, I'll hear it later. Sit down.
Number 37 sank down upon a chair. He pushed his handkerchief under the mask to wipe his face. Two tall men closed in upon him. The rest fell back.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will now name the traitor. Stand forward. Number 21. Take off your mask. Number 37. This man was introduced to our society by you under the name of Joseph Rogers, formerly second footman in the service of the Duke of Denver, dismissed for petty thievery. Did you take steps to verify the statement?
I did, as God's my witness. It was all straight. I had him identified by two of the servants. I asked all over about him. The story was true. I'll swear it was.
Number 21. Your name has been given as Joseph Rogers. Is that your real name? Answer me. Is that your real name?
No.
What is your name?
Peter Death Breddon Whimsy.
Silence! My compliments, your lordship. We thought Lord Whimsy was dead. He was killed, so the paper said, 2 winters ago while shooting big game in Africa. He even left a will, proved of £500,000.
To his mother, I believe, the Dowager Duchess of Denver.
Lord Peter Whimsy, indeed. Well-known book collector, man about town, distinguished criminologist. Took an active part in the solution of several famous mysteries.
Taking an active part, if you don't mind.
So you deliberately led us to think you were dead and became Joseph Rogers to gain entrance to our society. What has become of the real Joseph Rogers?
He died abroad. I took his place.
And the end of your impersonation to uncover our society?
Precisely.
I see. The robbery of your own fete, upon which we congratulated ourselves, and which you helped to execute, was arranged.
Obviously.
The robbery of the Duchess, your mother, was arranged by you.
It was. It was a very ugly tiara, no real loss to anybody with decent taste.
The burglary of the Winthrop mansion, the theft of the necklace at Covent Garden, the others as well. You arranged them all.
All. May I smoke, by the way?
You may not. Numbers 15, 22, 39. You have watched the prisoner. Has he made any attempt to communicate with anybody?
None. His letters and parcels have been opened. His telephone tapped and his movements followed. Even the water pipes in his house have been under observation for Morse code signals.
You're certain?
Absolutely.
Then we may be sure that he has been alone in this adventure. Well, ladies and gentlemen, please take your... Very well. Take the prisoner away. And be sure you explain carefully to him first the manner of his death. I'm sure he'll enjoy it.
Wait, at least you can let me die decently.
Take him away.
Stop, I have something to say, something to sell.
We make no bargains with traitors.
No, but listen. Do you think I haven't thought of this? I'm not a fool. I've left a letter.
To whom?
To the police. If I don't return tomorrow, it'll be opened.
It's a bluff. The prisoner sent no letter. He's been strictly watched for months.
I left the letter before I came to Lambeth.
Then it can't contain no information of any
value. Oh, but it does. The combination of my safe.
Indeed? Has this man's safe been searched?
Yes.
What did it contain?
No information of importance, sir. An outline of our organization, the name of the house, nothing that can't be altered and covered before morning.
And did you investigate the inner compartment of the safe?
You hear what he says, did you?
He's trying to bluff. There is no inner compartment.
I hate to contradict you, but I'm really afraid you must have overlooked it.
And what did you say was in the compartment, if it does exist?
The names of every member of this society with their addresses, photographs, and fingerprints.
How did you say you have contrived to get this information?
By doing a little detective work on my own.
But you've been watched.
True, the fingerprints of my watches adorn the first page of the collection.
That statement can be proved?
Certainly. The name of number 40, for example...
Stop! If you mention names here, you will certainly have no hope of mercy. Bring the prisoner to my office. Ladies and gentlemen, take your partners for the next dance. Yes.
Prove that I know your gang from number 1 through number 25. Do you want me to prove that I know the others as well?
My lord, your story fills me with regret that you are not, in fact, a member of our society. Wit, courage, and industry are valuable in an association like ours. I fear I cannot persuade you. No, I suppose not.
Yes?
Ask the members kindly to proceed to the supper room. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll not conceal from you the seriousness of the situation. The prisoner has recited to me 25 names and addresses which were thought to be unknown except to their owners and to me. There has been great carelessness. Fingerprints have been obtained. He showed me some photographs of them. He tells me that the book of names and addresses is to be found in the inner compartment of his safe, together with certain letters and papers stolen from the houses of members and several objects with fingerprints. I believe he tells the truth. He offers the combination of the safe in exchange for a quick death. I think his offer should be accepted. What is your opinion, ladies and gentlemen?
The combination is known already.
Fool! This man is Lord Peter Wimsey, a scientist of crime. Do you think he will have forgotten to change the combination?
Oh, I say give him the promise. Time's getting short.
Yes. You agreed?
Yes.
It's a bargain, Wimsey. What is the combination?
The word of the combination is unreliability.
And the inner door, the inner compartment?
In anticipation of the visit of the police, the inner door is open.
Good. Number 12 and 36. You will go to the prisoner's house and...
Why should any more members...
That's right.
I agree. Nobody ought to be trusted.
Then what, ladies and gentlemen, do you suggest?
You go yourself. You're the only one that knows all the names. You go yourself.
I second that motion.
Is the wish of the meeting, then, that I should go?
No. I say no. No, don't go. Number one is our president, the head and soul of our society. If anything should happen to him, where should we be? You've all blundered. We have your carelessness to thank for all this. Do you think we should be safe for 5 minutes if he were not here to repair your folly?
Well, there's something in that.
If you will pardon my suggesting it, the lady appears to be in a position peculiarly favorable for the reception of the president's confidences. The contents of my modest volume will be no news to her. Why should she not go herself?
Because I say she must not. If it is the will of the meeting, I'll go. Give me the key of the house.
Here.
Is your house watched?
No.
If I have not returned in 2 hours, act for the best to save yourselves. And do what you like with the prisoner.
The president has been gone 2 hours. Traitor! What's happened to him?
How should I know? Perhaps he's looked after himself and gone while the going was good.
Liar! Oh. He'd never do that. What have you done with him? Speak, or I'll make you speak.
I can only form a guess, madam. I'm afraid that your president may quite inadvertently have left the door of the inner compartment closed behind him, in which case...
Yes.
Well, let me explain the mechanism of my safe. Huh? The inner compartment has 2 doors. The outermost most opens outward with an ordinary key.
Oh, do you think that the president is so stupid as to be caught in an obvious trap? Undoubtedly, he will have wedged open that inner door.
Undoubtedly, madam. But the sole purpose of that inner door is to appear to be the only one. Hidden behind the hinge of that door is another, a sliding panel, also left open. Inside the compartment is the big, heavy ledger containing all the information about this society. This ledger lies on a steel shelf. Do I make myself clear?
Oh, yes, go on.
The steel shelf is balanced on a concealed spring. When the weight of the book, the ledger, is lifted, the shelf rises almost imperceptibly, and in rising it makes an electrical contact. Now, let me draw a picture. Your president steps into the inner compartment, sees the book, takes it up, anxiously to examine to see if it's the right one. The shelf rises, the electrical contact is made, and the steel panel behind him slides into place. He's trapped.
You devil! What is the word that opens the inner door? Quick, the word.
Do you remember the story of Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves?
Uh-huh.
Well, when I had this safe constructed, my mind went back, well, call me sentimental, if you will, to my childhood. The words that open the door are open sesame. Oh.
How long can a man live in this devil's trap of yours?
Oh, I should think he might hold out for a few hours if he didn't use up all the oxygen by hammering and yelling. I imagine if we go there at once, we'll be able to get him out all right.
I'll go myself.
I think you'd better take me with you.
Why?
Well, I'm the only person who can open the door.
But you've given me the word.
Yes, you have the word. But this door of mine, I'm rather proud of it. You know, it's my own invention. It's the latest thing. It will open to the words, open sesame, all right. But to my voice only.
Your voice. I'll chop your voice from my hands.
Don't.
What do you mean, your voice only?
Don't clutch my throat like that. You'll wreck my voice and then the door might not recognize it. Ah, there, that's better. The door got stuck for a week once and when I had a cold.
Is what he says true? Is it possible?
Perfectly possible, madam. It'll have a microphone arrangement. Could be done also with light vibrations.
We must let him go. Take the ropes off him.
Let him go? Nothing. He doesn't go to blab to the police. The president's done in, that's all. And we'd all better make traps while we can. It's all up, boys.
Right. Chuck this fella down the cellar and fasten him in. I'll go and destroy the ledgers. 32, you know where the switch is. Give us a quarter of an hour to clear, then you can blow the place to glory.
No. No, you can't leave one to die. He's your president, your leader. I won't let it happen. I won't. I'll free this man myself.
Here, none of that.
Now. Let me go. Let go of me.
Think, Blaster, think. It'll be light in an hour or two. The police may be here at any moment.
The police? Oh, yes. Yes, you're right. No, we mustn't imperil the safety of all for just one man. He himself would not wish it. Throw this man in the cellar and let's get out of here while there's time.
Here. This is good enough. Leave him here.
Right.
Let's go.
Hey, you chaps.
Yeah? Should have gagged him.
I say, it's lonesome down here in this cellar. You might at least leave the light on.
Don't worry about the dark. They're taking you here as the time fuse for the bomb that's going to blow out this place. It's all set. You won't have long to wait.
Not long.
Who is it? Who's there?
Hold still, so I can cut the ropes.
Well, if it isn't two. My compliments, madam, on your loyalty to your president.
Quick, quick. They've set the time fuse. The house is mined. Follow me as fast as you can. Number one must be saved. And only you can do it.
Well, how did you manage to...
There's no time for questions. Get up and follow me. You will release him. You promise.
I promise. But I warn you, madam, that this house is surrounded. When my safe door closed, it gave a signal to Scotland Yard. All the members of the society are taken.
Never mind them. Here, outside. Quick.
All right, who's there?
Is that you, Inspector? Get your fellows away, quick. The house is going up in a minute.
Quincy! It's Inspector Parker, old man. Are you all right?
I'm a bit winded. What happened, Inspector?
Oh, about half a dozen of them got blown up. The rest we bagged.
Hurry, we must hurry.
Who's this?
Oh, one of the gang. She's called number two.
We must save him. We must.
Golly, I clean forgot the gentleman of the safe. Parker, where's your car?
It's down the lane.
Send one of your men down to get it.
Right. Johnson, bring that car here.
Yes, sir.
I've got the number one of the whole company quietly asphyxiating at home. I promised we'd get back and save him. He's the bloke that we've been wanting. The man at the back of the Morrison case and the Hope Wilmington case and hundreds of others.
Is this it? Quite a contraption.
Yes, I only hope he hasn't upset the adjustment by thumping at it.
Oh, please, Harry.
I hope you haven't hurt my voice.
Oh, you sound all right.
I can only be conversational. Come on, old thing. Show us your paces. Open sesame. Open sesame, confound you. Open sesame. Open sesame.
He's dead.
Let me see. No, he's not. He lived to stand his trial.
And so, all's right with the world, as it always is when Lord Peter Wimsey is involved. The Cave of Alibaba by Dorothy Sayers was the story which gave us tonight's suspense. Suspense is produced by William Spear. Our guest director for this evening was Robert Louis Sheehan. Tonight's radio drama was written by Peter Lyon and scored by Bernard Herrmann. Romney Brent was Peter Wimsey. William Moulton played number one, and Ira Gerald, the lady in the case. Others in the cast were Kathleen Cordell, Victor Beecroft, Roland Bottomley, J.W. Austin, William Podmore, Ian Martin, and William Moulton. Next Wednesday, Suspense will not be heard because of a special all-star Hollywood broadcast which Paramount Pictures will present. 2 weeks from tonight, at this time, Columbia will bring you another selected story from the world's great literature of thrills. Another study in suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the truth. This is Ripley's. believe it or not.
Long before there were any of today's methods of measuring, people in India measured distances by the sound of a cow's moo, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you the blood-curdling story of a doomed man's last reward. One of the great injustices in the bloody French Revolution was the execution of Antoine Laurent Lavoisier, the founder of modern chemistry. He was arrested on totally trumped-up charges and sentenced to the guillotine. But France's great scientist was not to die without recognition of his contribution to learning. So Lavoisier was awarded France's highest scientific award, the Wreath of Everlasting Flowers. The next day, they cut off his head. Believe it or not.
Lady Astor presents The Screen Guild Players. The Lady Astor Screen Guild play tonight, Flesh and Fantasy. The starring players...
This is Ella Raines.
And this is Charles Boyer.
Tonight, Lady Astor presents the Screen Guild players in a strange and provocative story from the Universal Picture Flesh and Fantasy, an absorbing and romantic expedition into the world of dreams. It stars Charles Boyer as Paul Gaspar and Ella Raines as Joan Stanley.
It was a familiar thing to me. The drum beat, as I stepped out on the wire, the crowd, the faces filled with fear. I had grown to accept them, to take them for granted. I was relaxed, poised, sure of myself. I was the great Gaspar, until I had a dream. That night, we were playing our last performance in London. I was in my dressing room. There was still some time before my act would be called, so I stretched out on my couch and I fell asleep. I fell asleep and I had a dream. The old familiar thing. The drum. The sea of faces looking up at me. Only something this time, something was different. One face stood out from all the rest. A girl. A lovely girl who wore... two diamond earrings, shaped like tiny harps. Her eyes were filled with fear for me. And suddenly, I felt that fear myself. The wire blurred. I swayed. I lost my balance,
and I fell. And as I fell...
Mr. Casper! Mr. Casper, sir!
Huh? Oh, sir.
What's the matter? Huh? You have a dream, sir?
Oh, yes.
Well, you're on in 5 minutes, Mr. Casper. Shouldn't I ought to brush your coat off?
Please.
Yeah, we all have dreams, sir. Yeah. Like the time I dreamed, my wife had up and left me. I sure was happy till I woke up. But there she was. Your hat, sir? Oh,
thanks.
What was you dreaming about, Mr. Casper?
Huh? About a girl.
Oh, that sure is bad. But she'll have a hard time catching up with you in the circus. Here today and gone tomorrow. That's how circus folks, ain't it, sir?
Yes, 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 I suppose it is.
Hello, Gaspar.
Hiya, Paul. Oh, that's funny. Didn't even bother to answer. What's eating him tonight?
Well, you know these artists. Temperamental.
Well, Paul, you've certainly got an audience tonight. Every seat gone. I ought to bill every performance as the last. Makes them flock in here like... What's the matter, Paul? Don't you feel well?
Eh? Oh, I'm all right. I had a dream just now.
What kind of a dream?
Well, I dreamed that I fell from...
You fell? You mean while you were up on the... Paul. Paul, what's wrong? You've never paid much attention to the crowd. Who are you looking for?
Eh? Nobody.
Now, look, Paul, if you don't feel you...
No, I told you I feel fine, Lamar. There's my cue. I'll see you later.
What's the matter with him? Why doesn't he jump?
I don't know. He's been acting kind of funny tonight.
Lamar, do you think he might...
Shut up!
Oh, look. He turned back.
He lost his nerve.
Oh, make him come down. Mr. Lamar.
Call the next number. Start the ballet. Go on, get out there. Step on it, will you?
Everything was going round and round. I couldn't even see the wire. Well, maybe you think I'm crazy, Lamar, but you didn't dream it. Space, down, down, conscious all the time.
That must have been rough. Well, we're all a little on edge. We had a close shave, Paul.
I don't know how close. It was all I could do to make the platform. Worked for years to get where I am, and now this. My whole life twisted by a dream.
You think there's anything to it?
Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I have to be wrong only once, you know. I can hear her screaming even now.
Hear who screaming?
The girl. Oh, that's right. I didn't tell you. There was a girl in my dream. I could see her so plainly all the way down, screaming. And those diamond earrings shaking as if they were alive. As if they wanted to scream, too.
Well, Paul, I ain't holding for or against dreams. Some come true, some don't. The worst that can happen to me, I fall out of bed. With you, it's different.
Yes.
And you're the star of the show, and I don't want to lose you, Paul. But I don't want to lose you the hard way either, so here's the setup. If you feel you can lick this dream stuff, you can do your act. Or you can do it with a net. Or if it's still got you, you can go back to your old act.
My old act?
Now, look, we're sailing for New York tomorrow morning. You can think it over on the boat.
That's pretty good food they dish out on his boat.
Sure is. Pass the cream, will you?
I wonder where Paul is. I've hardly seen him since we sailed.
He's been keeping pretty much to himself. I guess he's still shook up by that dream.
You think he is?
Sure. Dreams can tie you up in knots. I've got a girlfriend who had a dream she was chased by an ape.
That wasn't a dream.
Huh?
Every girl, if she's got anything, is chased by an ape sooner or later.
Nix, here comes Paul now.
Good evening.
Oh, hello, Paul. We were just talking about dreams.
Were you?
Yeah. I was reading in a book called Froude, where all dreams...
It's Freud, not Froude.
Huh?
That's the name of the author, not the book.
Oh.
Isn't it, Paul?
Well, maybe you had a split personality.
I dreamed once I was going over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
Well, did you?
Did I what?
Go over the falls in a barrel.
Sure.
How long after you had the dream?
It wasn't after, it was before.
Oh, I see. Well, if you'll excuse me.
Where are you going, Paul?
Out on deck for a walk.
It was that night, out on the deck.
were running through fog in a heavy sea. I gripped the rail as a great wave came over. And as it washed away...
I beg your pardon.
You. It is you. The girl in my dream.
Let me go.
No, no, please. Don't be frightened. I'm the one who should be afraid.
I'm sorry. It's very rough out here and it's late. I'm going in. Good night.
Oh, no, wait. No, one moment, please. Try to remember. Haven't we met somewhere before?
Never. And if you don't go away, I'll call for help.
Well, in the circus, perhaps. I'm a performer, an aerialist. My name is Paul Gaspar. Maybe you've seen me.
I haven't been to a circus since I was a child.
Oh, well, then somewhere else in London, Monte Carlo. Please try to think.
I tell you, we've never met.
But in Paris, then. Barcelona, Naples, Cairo. Somewhere. That would explain everything.
I've never been to any of those places.
Well, then, it's even more wonderful.
Oh, you're certainly giving an old act a new twist.
Wonderful.
Oh, now, please.
No, it's true. We have met before. If not in this world, in this life, somewhere. Look, I saw you night before last in a dream, as clearly, as vividly as I see you now. I was doing my act on the wire. I fell, and you screamed. Do you understand that? I fell. And yet, here I am, and here you are.
You're just imagining things.
Your earrings. Where are they? You have them, of course.
What earrings? What are you talking about?
I saw them, even while I was falling, shaped like two little harps. Jewels flashing in the floodlights, as if they were alive.
Who are you? What do you want? What are you following me for?
I'm not following you. We just met. You had the earrings, haven't you?
No, it's none of your business.
But you believe me now, don't you?
Why should I? After all, it was only a dream. It might have been any girl.
Oh, but the earrings, Miss...
Stanley. Joan Stanley. I don't know why I should tell you.
Joan.
Look, if you really saw me in your dream, I should think you'd want to avoid me.
I should, shouldn't I?
Of course. I might bring you bad luck.
Yes, but it's a charming risk.
Good night.
Until tomorrow, for dinner?
I believe that all I said was good night.
Cocktail, Paul?
No, we'll wait for her. I want you to meet her, Lamar. I want you to see for yourself.
Tell me, how do you know she's the same girl?
The earrings.
But maybe she was telling her the truth. Maybe she hasn't got them.
She has them.
How do you know?
I know.
And you're sure she'll have dinner with you?
Sure.
But you told me she said she wouldn't.
Three times. The third refusal was final. She'll be here.
Mr. Gaspar?
Oh, here, steward.
A note for you, sir.
Thank you.
Not at all, sir. You're quite welcome.
Hmm. Is it from her, Paul?
Who else?
What does it say?
There is no use waiting. I cannot dine with you. Well, that settles it.
You mean she won't come, huh?
I mean she's expecting me. I'd better go and get her.
No, go away. You can't come in.
Oh, for just a moment, please.
I said you couldn't come in.
Well, you're late. You know, I wonder if anything had happened.
Didn't you get my note?
Yes.
I thought you might be foolish enough to expect me.
Oh, it was good of you to think of me. My goodness, you must have traveled a lot. All those tags on your trunk.
Perhaps it's not my trunk.
Perhaps not. Shall we go?
I told you I wasn't going to dine with you.
But you're dressed, and you were thinking of me.
I always dress for dinner. Besides, I might bring you bad luck, if you're... silly dream means anything.
My dream? Oh, yes, I remember you. It was in Monte Carlo. I said to myself, what a beautiful girl.
How nice. Too bad I've never been to Monte Carlo.
No.
No.
But the labels on your trunk.
I didn't say it was my trunk.
Oh, it's strange. I remember the scene so perfectly. But I may be wrong about the place.
Maybe you're wrong about the girl.
Oh, no. Now, let me see. Where could you have been...
Only in your mind?
Ah, that comes later, and it lasts forever.
Oh, you are amusing.
You're delightful.
Thank you. You know, you're rather nice yourself. You almost tempt me to reverse my decision.
Then you will dine with me?
Oh, but I warn you, I'm going to wear my earrings.
Your earrings?
I've never worn them before. Here, would you like to see them?
Shaped like tiny harps, set with diamonds.
You were so sure I had them.
Yes. Yes, I was sure you had them. I was sure.
The second act of the Lady Esther Screen Guild play will follow in just a moment, but now a word from Lady Esther.
I have some real news to announce tonight. Now, for the first time, there's one shade of face powder intensely flattering to four different types of skin. One shade that almost anyone can use, that instantly dramatizes practically every skin it touches. It's called Bridal Pink. It's based on an entirely new and different principle in color blending. Whether your hair is brown, black, auburn, or blonde, Bridal Pink will instantly intensify your particular coloring, will bring out all the life and warmth of your skin, will give you a more youthful, a more vivacious look. Women who've tried Bridal Pink write and tell me there should be new superlatives in the English language to describe the beauty it gives the skin. Lady Esther Bridal Pink takes away that yellow, faded look so aging to the appearance. It makes you look as though you've just come from a long vacation, so fresh and alive, so full of young vitality. You can't possibly go wrong if the shade of powder you choose is Lady Esther Bridal Pink. Never before has there been a shade that so instantly wakened and beautified even a dull, sallow skin. And it's so simple, so pleasant to apply. Just pat it gently to cover all your face and neck, that's all. But what a sudden, delightful transformation in your appearance. The demand for Bridal Pink has exceeded all expectations, and your druggist may be sold out of it. You may have to try several stores before you can get it, but keep on trying. Ask your druggist to order it for you. Accept no other shade, for remember, you can't possibly put Lady Esther Bridal Pink on your face without instantly looking younger and far more fascinating.
And now, Lady Esther presents the second act of Flesh and Fantasy, starring Ella Raines and Charles Boyer.
Yes, two little diamond earrings, exactly as I had seen them in my dream. I tried to tell myself it wasn't true, it was a trick. My mind was playing me, a mere coincidence. And as the days went by, I managed somehow to convince myself. Joan helped, or she helped a lot. She dined with me and walked and laughed. Until I thought so much of her, I had no time to think about myself. But soon, too soon, it was our last night out. And suddenly she was not laughing anymore. I remember we were standing by the rail, and after a long time, I said to her, "Joan, you look so sad. What are you thinking about?"
"About you."
"Oh, does that make you sad?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"I don't know. Perhaps I..."
"Hmm? Perhaps what?"
"Perhaps I was wishing we'd met sooner."
"Why do you say that? Is there someone else?"
"You mustn't ask."
"Why not? Don't you think I should know?"
"Paul, we land tomorrow. The end of the journey."
"Of course, the end of a journey, but not the end of us. Tomorrow we'll be in New York together, darling."
"No. I won't see you after tonight."
"Joan."
"Oh, it's been wonderful, Paul, but tomorrow it ends."
"But you don't mean that. You can't. It's a..."
I do mean it, Paul. It's got to be that way."
"Well, if you want it so."
"Perhaps it's better. I'm afraid for you, Paul. Remember, I wasn't all of your dream."
"No, but perhaps I wasn't falling at all, just rushing through time and space to find you. Perhaps that's what the dream meant. Joan, I've got to know."
"Please, Let's not spoil our last moments together. Let's talk and laugh.
Miss Templeton? Oh, Miss Templeton, I didn't know you were aboard.
I'm afraid you've made a mistake.
Well, don't you remember? We met in Cairo at Shepherd's.
I'm sorry. I've never been to Cairo.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I was absolutely sure that we had met before. I didn't mean it.
Joan, you're not hiding anything from me, are you?
Good heavens, you don't think you're the only man I've ever had a casual flirtation with.
But I didn't mean to offend you.
Well, then let's forget it.
Joan, is that the truth? Do you call ours a casual flirtation?
I didn't say that.
Is it?
Well, we certainly met casually enough.
It doesn't sound like you, Joan. I'm afraid that man from Cairo has disturbed you.
I don't know why you're asking all these questions.
I'm not asking you any questions. I want...
You are, and I won't stand for it. We've had what we've had, and that's all there is to it. I'm going in. Good night.
And so she went. After a long while, I turned and found my way back to my cabin. I lay awake for hours that night, but finally I fell asleep. I fell asleep and had another dream. It seemed that we were at the pier in New York. There were the usual crowds, the usual noises, and one thing I remember very clearly, they were lowering the lion's cage from the ship. I was looking for Joan. I felt I had to find her, and suddenly I saw her in the crowd. But just then, two men stepped up to her, and one of them had a pair of handcuffs, and he said,
Miss Templeton?
Yes?
You are Miss Templeton?
What is it?
Funny we should find you here. Come along.
Wait!
Mr. Gaspar, sir.
Huh? What? Oh, yes, who is it?
Stewart, sir. I was passing, and I thought I heard you call, sir.
Oh, no. No, thank you. I was dreaming.
You all right, sir?
Oh, yes, I'm all right, Stuart. I'm quite all right.
Custom office on the right, please. Custom office on the right.
Paul?
Oh, Joan.
Oh, Paul, I've been looking for you. I wanted to tell you how sorry I am about last night. I didn't want you to leave without letting you know.
Oh, I've forgotten all about that. Joan, we are friends, aren't we?
Of course.
No, I mean, if I can help you, if in any way you need me.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Goodbye.
No, wait.
For what?
Well, look. They are loading the lion cage, just like in my...
Oh, Paul, you're as excited as a little boy. I'm sorry, I've got to hurry now.
Why? Are you expecting somebody?
Just some relatives. Goodbye.
No, don't go. You mustn't go.
Why not?
Well, I mean, I can't let you go, not yet. I'll walk out to the street with you, just in case.
In case of what?
Well, I don't know. Let us say, in case your relatives forgot. You see? Well, I was lucky I came along. Your relatives did not even show up.
I think I'm the lucky one.
No relatives, no friends, no foes. Nobody came. I'm all you have left.
Paul, this is goodbye. I'm going to hail a cab, and when I drive away...
No, darling, I know a little bar on 52nd Street. Can you make it for lunch at 1?
No, Paul.
Cocktails, then, at 5.
No, Paul.
What about dinner? Say 8 o'clock.
No, darling.
Well, at least you come tomorrow night for the opening.
Paul... You seem so cheerful.
I am. Have you ever been happily disappointed?
Did something happen?
No, something did not happen. That's why I'm...
Paul.
Oh, it's Mr. Lamar.
Oh, hello, Miss Stanley. I'm glad I caught you. I think maybe you ought to rehearse your old act. Oh. You haven't done it in a long time.
Forget it, Lamar. I'm doing my regular act. I never said I wouldn't do it, did I?
Well, that beats me. So you're not afraid of that dream anymore?
Will you stop annoying me with your dreams?
My dreams?
There's nothing to that stuff, Lamar. I've looked into it. Joan, I'll see you tomorrow night.
You really want me to be there?
Well, I insist. Oh, you will come, won't you?
I don't know, Paul. I don't know.
We'll drop from a wire 70
the great Gaspar!
He can't.
Father! Paul!
But don't!
Don't try it, Paul! Go back! Go back!
Yes, come in.
Come in, darling.
John, you did come.
You see, nothing happened. I knew it wouldn't.
How? How did you know?
Because I had another dream, and you were in it. And that dream did not come true. Now, let's forget about it. Where shall we go to celebrate?
I can't go with you tonight.
What? You can't?
I've tried to tell you, Paul. I must go away for a while. I have to go.
You mean someone is coming for you?
Trust me, Paul. Believe in me. Believe that I love you, that I'll always love you. It won't be for long. And then, if you still want me...
I'll always want you.
I had a dream, too, on the boat. Not when I was asleep. The most beautiful dream I've ever had. And maybe it'll come true.
If you want it to, it will.
I've never wanted anything more in all my life.
Darling.
You understand, don't you? I must go, Paul.
Yes, I understand. I always knew you would go.
How?
I just knew. And I know that someday we'll meet again. As if for the first time. Goodbye, my darling.
Goodbye.
Miss Templeton.
Yes?
You are Miss Templeton?
What is it?
We want to ask you about some stolen diamonds.
Funny we should find you here.
Why? I telephoned to headquarters myself.
All right. Let's go along.
And Ella Raines for an absorbing performance.
It was a pleasure to be here, Mr. Bradley. We know how much this radio program contributes to the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its country house. And we all feel it's a great privilege to share in that work. And now, before we tell you about next week's show, here's a word from one of America's best-known beauty authorities, Lady Esther.
Thank you, Miss Raines. Ladies, a little while ago, I told you that Lady Esther Bridal Pink is not just a new shade of powder. It's an entirely new kind of powder shade. Bridal Pink ends forever the risk of selecting the wrong shade of powder. Bridal Pink is not for just one particular type of skin coloring. It's flattering to four basic skin types. It has the amazing quality of dramatizing practically every skin it touches. But it's not only the color of bridal pink that's so remarkable. The texture of Lady Esther face powder is unusual, too, as you'll see the instant you apply it. Lady Esther powder is scientifically blended to give a more youthful finish to your skin, to help blend out flaws and hide little blemishes, to erase signs of weariness and fatigue, to cling softly hour after hour, never letting shiny patches show through. The response to my new shade, Bridal Pink, has been phenomenal. For women can actually see the years slip away when they apply it, can actually see themselves become younger looking, better looking. If your druggist is sold out of Bridal Pink, you may have to wait for his next shipment or try some other store. But please don't accept any other color, for remember, no powder shade can give you the happy, radiant look of a woman in love, like Lady Esther Bridal Pink.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present Ramona. It will star Loretta Young and Joseph Cotton. Be sure to listen. Ella Raines appears through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, producers of Walter Wanger's Salome, Where She Danced. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. This is Truman Bradley speaking for Lady Esther. Thank you and good night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.